guys, and welcome to a brand new episode of Nerds Talk Movies. My name is Taylor Cole, and I'm going to be your host today. Joining me is a man who has been spending over 5 years in the podcasting industry and covering different facets of the entertainment industry. He is the host and founder, right, of the Geek Garage podcast, David Dasow. David, how you doing?
Hey, man. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for that lovely introduction. You made me sound a lot more legit than I actually feel like I am. it has, in fact, been 5 years, but, time flies, and it feels like we just started yesterday. But
David, tell us a little bit about yourself, though. Tell us a little bit about the Geek Garage podcast. Of course, we'll plug your podcast in the description, and later on we'll open it up for you to plug any upcoming stuff you guys got going on over there. But just give our audience, our small community, a little bit of a taste of what the Geek Garage podcast is and what you are as a podcast host and as a person.
Sure. So the Geek Garage podcast, every episode we introduce it as the most inclusive and accessible nerd culture audio program on the interwebs. And basically, I mean, it's self-explanatory by the intro. We're casual fans, me and my co-host Zach. We're casual fans of like all things nerdy, geeky, and pop culture related. And so we cover a very wide spectrum of topics. Here lately, it's been a lot of contemporary stuff because there's just, I don't know, it feels like there's always a plethora of new content coming out, like whether it's like, you know, the Book of Boba Fett or
what we're talking about today.
Yeah. Exactly. Here lately, it's been a lot of like contemporary stuff, but we also do like evergreen topics as well. You know, stuff that, you know, you could tune in like 5 years from now and still get something out of. We've been doing it for about 5 years now, and the show has evolved a lot since the beginning. It was basically just me and a couple of my friends, and we just had our normal nerdy conversations that we would have to begin with, but we just set up a couple microphones and recorded. And it's evolved. I like to say it's a little bit more professional now, but we still have fun and still get pretty silly on the podcast. So
you don't want to lose that like authentic feel. I think you get a little too professional and then it just comes across as like what everybody's doing. Thing that I think makes people, and what kind of I was introduced to you through Tristan Benz, usual co-host of this podcast. He was on your show, had a lot of great things to say, and I actually took a minute to listen to not only that episode he was on, and I gotta admit, he still doesn't have a filter. No matter what he told you, he does not. And I also listened to your spoiler talk for Hawkeye.
Oh, okay.
With their wife, and I thought that was a great episode. You guys definitely covered certain topics that I don't think any other podcast covered.
Really?
In that show.
That's great to know. My wife, she comes on intermittently. She's very, very passionate about Hawkeye. Like, that's her favorite Avenger of all time. She's a big Jeremy Renner fan to begin with, and she just loves the whole like a dynamic and dichotomy of Hawkeye and Kate Bishop. So she was like, yes, I want to do that episode, and I had no one else to come on as a guest, and Zach hadn't seen it yet, so it just worked out perfectly in that sense. And so having her super passionate about that, definitely, I think you can definitely feel it through the episode. It seems like that's the case anyways.
Well, I got a question for you, David.
Sure.
How do you feel about John Cena?
John Cena!
Because today, David, we're talking about Peacemaker Season 1. We're doing a spoiler talk for it on Nerds Talk Movies.
Yeah.
And you mentioned you were dying to talk about it. I was like, oh man, we haven't been able to get a schedule between me, Tristan Benz, or other co-host Drew Garrison together. right. for it. So it just, it worked out perfectly to me. It'd be like, oh crap, you want to talk about it too? Let's do it. And let's go ahead and talk about how we got here. From the Suicide Squad to Peacemaker. So a few years ago, David, DC brought in Guardians of the Galaxy director James Gunn to direct a Suicide Squad movie, getting pretty much free rein to do as he pleased. Gunn proceeded to put on one hell of a bloody and comedic film. Titled The Suicide Squad, this movie did have a lot of established DC characters like Rick Flagg, King Shark, and of course, Harley Quinn. But it also introduced audiences to several deep-cut DC characters like Bloodsport, a trained killer with the makings of a redemptive hero-slash-leader and a phobia of rats. Polka Dot Man, a metahuman with severe mother issues and the ability to, well, you know, throw polka dots at people. I don't have this here on our notes here, but also Ratcatcher 2, who was, to me, the heart of the film and arguably the best part.
100%.
Had the ability to control rats, and I just love also how her father is Taika Waititi. It's just such a random cameo in that movie. It gets me every time I see it.
Yeah.
And then I also have here Peacemaker, who is another trained killer. It was kind of poked fun at in the movie with how similar he is to Bloodsport, who was described, though, on the lead up to this movie as a douchey version of Captain America. Long story short, Gunn picked John Cena, who had essentially been playing a Captain America-like character over in the WWE for over a decade, to play Peacemaker in the Suicide Squad. Soon thereafter, it was revealed that Peacemaker would be getting his own solo series on HBO Max with Gunn and Cena attached to the project. Some people were a bit confused by this move from DC. After all, Peacemaker was not really a household name. These points were completely valid, and it only got more confusing by the time the Suicide Squad actually released via HBO Max and in theaters. Although many thought John Cena was a scene stealer throughout the film, his character was one of the few to actually regress by the end of the movie. The core Suicide Squad team took a heroic turn and defeated Starro. Peacemaker, on the other hand, stuck to his extreme code of protecting peace at all costs, by stealing evidence of Project Starfish to the request of Amanda Waller and killing Rick Flagg in the process. Rick Flagg had actually become a fan favorite in this movie, which was kind of also a surprising twist.
Yeah.
Bloodsport would eventually shoot Peacemaker in the throat, leading people watching the film to think the upcoming series was a prequel. Turns out Peacemaker survived the encounter and was about to be part of a new mission to apparently, and this was the quote from the post-credit scene, save the fucking world. David, before we get into this series, what were your thoughts on Peacemaker in the Suicide Squad? And did you have any reservations about the character going into this series?
Sure. So overall, I did like the character of Peacemaker in the Suicide Squad. Of course, I was less of a fan by the end when he kills Rick Flagg, like you said. By that point, like, I feel like most of the audience was like, yeah, Rick Flagg. Like, I was kind of like, yeah, Rick Flagg, yeah, up until like a certain point. And then, like, I don't know, it felt like there was some sort of tipping point where all of a sudden, like, Rick Flagg was like the fucking hero and you know, you rooted for him. And
it's a bit of the character surviving Suicide Squad. And like, I don't know what you think of the first movie, but for most of the audiences to be like, ah, this wasn't very good. For the character to kind of come out of the other side and come back in this movie and be so fun and entertaining, I think audiences really latched on to that. Been like, no, there was a version of this character that was great. It's right here. And then, of course, Peacemaker kills him at the end.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But anyways, so as far as reservations regarding the show, my biggest feeling I had when I heard, like, that they were making the Peacemaker spinoff series, I was like, really? Peacemaker? Because, like, at first I was confused for multiple reasons. One of those reasons was that I don't know why, but I didn't stay attuned to after the credits. So I didn't even know that there was a post-credits scene.
They're just like, oh, I guess Peacemaker's gone. I guess that's a prequel.
Yeah, so I was so friggin' confused when they were like, yeah, they're making a Peacemaker spinoff series. And I was like, how? He got shot in the throat and then a building fell on him. But they were like, did you not watch the post-credit scene? And I was like, no.
Just as a side note, by the way, that scene where Idris Elba's Bloodsport is just going down as the building is tumbling and he's just looking like a badass the entire time is right. One of the best, most badass entrances I've probably ever seen in a superhero movie.
Yeah, it was pretty dope. It was a good scene. But yeah, like another part that was confusing to me, like after I learned that, you know, he was in fact still alive, I was like, you know, wouldn't it make more sense to for like a more well-known character from the Suicide Squad to get like their own spinoff series, like Harley, even though she did get like the Birds of Prey movie. But you know, all that being said, like I wasn't on board with a Peacemaker spinoff because I liked his character, and you know, that decision he made at the end and killing Rick Flag, like, yes, that was bad. But I was like, I feel like with them doing a spinoff series, there's going to be, you know, major character development, you know, a major arc, you know, et cetera, et cetera, room for growth. So I was on board, you know, from the get-go. And plus it's, you know, HBO and Warner Brothers teaming up like they usually do. And, you know, when that happens, usually magic happens. and I was on board. I'm a big DC fan when it comes to like the stuff that gets, you know, put onto HBO, which I guess is like pretty much everything nowadays. But
well, you got the Harley Quinn show. You have,
right?
Unfortunately, Titans. I don't know why it's the second thing I came up with, but Doom Patrol, of course.
Yeah, I haven't checked out a lot of the animated stuff. I've heard that the Harley Quinn animated series is really good.
I've seen season one. I haven't seen anything else from it, but season one is fantastic. What they do with Bane is just, it's hilarious.
Oh, yeah? I need to check it out. And then I was a huge fan of the Snyder Cut of Justice League. People, you know, they like to complain about the duration, the runtime, and I was just like, I don't think it was long enough. Like, fuck, make it 6 hours. I don't care.
Let's get a sequel. Restore to Snyderverse. So I kind of was like you, and it was just like, oh, Peacemaker, really? And then also, for me, we did a spoiler talk on the Suicide Squad. And one of the things I said there was, I don't really want to see this character back, because I had become a fan of Rick Flag, and oh, he died in the movie. I really started to like him. Mm-hmm. And for what I kind of put here in this, how we got here, how everybody else progressed as characters and Peacemaker regresses. And it's done like that on purpose, obviously, especially with the Peacemaker series. But when you get done with the Suicide Squad, you're just like, no, fuck this guy. Like, you're watching the movie and you're like, you can see him taking that same road as the other characters, but he just doesn't. He decides to go with his code, and by the end of the movie, you're just like, no, fuck this guy. I don't want to see him anymore. And then by the end of this show, I'm like, I want a season 2, 3, 4. Like, I want to see this redemption story continue, because I still don't even think it's over. And that's what I love about it.
Yeah, I was so pumped when they announced, you know, last week or whenever it was that season 2 got a green light. I was like, yes, like, so excited about that.
So Peacemaker Season 1 picks up a short time after the events of The Suicide Squad, with Christopher Smith, aka Peacemaker, recovering in the hospital and being forced to join a new operation called Project Butterfly. This story will take a ton of crazy twists, but I'm sure we'll talk about all that too. Mm-hmm. It heavily revolved around Peacemaker's origins and how he became the peace-at-all-cost villain we saw in the Suicide Squad. Let's go ahead and get into it, David. What are your general thoughts on this show? At least season one, because you just mentioned it's getting a season two.
Right, yeah. I have a lot of thoughts, and I'm going to do my best to give the very surface level stuff so we don't we/I don't end up jumping into one thing specifically right off the bat. So, but with all that said, I loved it. I loved it to death. The whole season from start to finish completely blew me away and exceeded my expectations with every passing episode. Like every single episode that that aired, I loved it even more. I think James Gunn is slowly but surely proving to us that he's basically the Steven Soderbergh for nerds. Like the man knows how to direct an ensemble film. Like, you know, he's of course done the first two Guardians of the Galaxy movies, and those were big ensemble casts. He did the Suicide Squad, that which was a big ensemble cast. He did this, which, you know, was a lot of characters and very with very differing character traits. So, you know, it just further cemented that James Gunn, he knows what he's doing in these kinds of situations. He's, you know, your nerd's nerd. I also thought that the show was very applicable to like our current society's state, and had a lot of like important subliminal messages to send. I thought the acting was amazing. Maybe the most important aspect was the diversity of all the characters. And I'm not just referring to like ethnicities and all that. Like I thought there was a ton of positive representation, which I didn't think came off too super heavy. Like, oh, look how woke we are. Like, you know, we cast, you know,
no, this it kind felt of like all these characters were completely, nobody was the same.
Right.
Like, everybody had their own character traits. Everybody had like the closest, like two I could say was Mern and Harcourt, and that's just because Harcourt isn't very emotional at all, and Mern is a butterfly who's learning human emotions as he went throughout the series. So that's even the closest I think you could. And then you can make also comparisons to Adebayo and Chris, which we definitely will because I love their character arcs in this show.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, like I said, I have a lot more thoughts than that, but you know, I like I said, I don't want to go off on any tangents or down any rabbit holes just yet. Like you said, I wanted to answer your actual question of general thoughts on the show. So
I really love this show. I don't know what I'm gonna give it here at the end. It's going to be a high rating for me, no matter what, because this is a show that I think starts out as, this is nice, this is pretty funny, you know, it has some hits and misses, I don't think every joke lands, and near the end when we get to the final ratings, I actually have some thoughts from Tristan Benz, he sent over some notes for me to read out,
and he has
some of the same sentiments I have, but I think as the show goes on, it starts to become better. Like, not even, I want to say better, it just becomes different organically. It becomes this from, you know, I want to go ahead and get into it because it's hard to talk generally about the show because everything about it is, you got to get into it. And what I want to start with is the opening sequence. And when this thing first happened, it blew up and everybody was like, oh, this is the funniest, this is one of the best opening sequences ever. And what I think this is so brilliant, and I'm not the first person to say this. This has been said a billion times on podcasts, videos, reviews, all this stuff. But what I love about it is this opening sequence starts out as this funny thing, and it's a funny transition into the theme. And then by the end, James Gunn used it to change the tone. It's fucking brilliant, David. I had never seen a show just use a theme to change the tone. Like, by the finale, you're just watching opening credits and you feel bad.
So, with the opening sequence, are you referring to, like, the dance number? Or...
Yes. Do you want to taste it? Because what they would do, they would transition into it with, like, a funny joke or something like this. And then, I believe it was the second to last episode, was you finally get the flashback with Chris and figure out what happened to his brother, I think. Yeah. That was one of them. Oof. And then it cuts into it. And then the last one is Adebayo and Chris completely at odds. Because mm-hmm. she's trying to apologize. He just won't hear it. And it's just, it's so awkward. And then it cuts to it. So by that time, James Gunn has turned the fun little theme song into, well, I feel bad about this right now. Like, the team's fractured. You learn that Peacemaker, his dad blames him for just some twisted, sick reason for killing his brother. Mm-hmm. And it just, it's really brilliant to me to just twist this fun little theme song into a just, especially then when we get into the finale with the fight.
Yeah.
That's plays there too. And then it turns into a twisted version there with Harcourt literally bleeding out.
Yeah.
It's just so good to me.
Yeah. I don't think that was something that I really noticed until later on. I was watching, I forget the YouTube channel. Let's see, what was it? The New Rock Stars, they do pretty decent recaps and whatnot, but I was watching some of those, and then just like what you said, it didn't really click for me until, you know, just recently, that the quick but seamless transitions from like dialogue to the do you really want it like it goes from like happy and like fun and exciting, and then it just evolves to like kind of sad, like what you were saying, to the second to last episode. You know, he's Peacemaker is in the bathroom, like, you know, trying to gain his composure and whatnot. And Vigilante is like banging on the door, and the bang is like mimicking the drum beat at the beginning of the song.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, segues into that dance number. So yeah, you're right. It does have that weird tonal shift throughout the series.
And I think another thing too is the actual, which by the way, fantastic job for everybody who had to do that dance. It seemed very difficult.
Right.
And one thing I remember at the beginning, people were like, why are they so stone-faced? This is weird. And I remember there being theories about like, oh, maybe they all become butterflies at the end or something like that.
Right. But,
and then by the end, you start to realize also why they went that direction too. That like, mm-hmm. it's more unsettling and more like, oh man, this has a different feel to it now that mm-hmm. they're stone-faced and they don't have any expression. Towards the beginning, it was just a little quirky and like, oh, this is funny and this is really good. This is a fun song. I think it was actually at the top of the rock charts last week or something, which is hilarious.
But yeah,
just this is so far, I just want to point out, this is just me talking about the opening sequence, like the opening credits to every episode, right, and being like how brilliant it is. We haven't even talked about the actual show itself yet.
Right.
You got anything else to add about the opening sequence? Or I don't know why I keep saying that. The opening credits.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think we hit everything that there is to hit. Like you said, there's plenty of podcasts and YouTube videos and other, you know, blog posts that dissect this particular part of the show and in ad nauseum. So yeah, I don't think there's any new ground to break.
I'll tell you what though, David, I think one of the other things about this show that are so great is the performances. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's really a average performance here. I think everybody here crushes it.
Yeah.
And especially, and it's obvious, this is going to be obvious because he's the title character. He's mm-hmm. playing the title character. John Cena.
Yeah.
From going from the Marine back in, I don't know, what, 2006, 2007, I don't know.
Yeah.
And being a piece of cardboard walking around as an action hero mm-hmm. to, we see him in a few other movies, and as he's it seems like he's completely transitioning out of his pro wrestling career there,
mm-hmm.
but now we see him in Fast and Furious franchise, and we see him in this, and I feel like he's come such a long way as an actor, and you see this performance here as Peacemaker, and he is so damn funny as this character, but when he needs to turn it on and he needs to get the audience to give a shit about him, mm-hmm. he can do that too.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. John Cena's got acting chops. I never would have thought that those words would leave my mouth. like you said, he's, you know, it's not a brand new thing for pro wrestlers to retire from pro wrestling and and go into acting for either theater or feature films.
Dave Bautista, The Rock, yeah. Dwayne Johnson. For the Mandalorian fans, Sasha Banks, don't remember her real name, but she was recently in that show. So a lot of people have done it. It's not like he's the first.
Right. Yeah. And it totally makes sense because a lot of pro wrestlers, they either are required or they electively take acting classes because, you know, that's part of pro wrestling is, you know, having that stage performance. Like, yes, you have to have a tremendous amount of athleticism, but
you're trying to sell the audience that, hey, exactly. I'm the good guy you should cheer for. I'm the asshole you need to boo out of the stadium.
Right. Exactly.
It's as simple as that, and that's what, like, I think why you see so many wrestlers go into acting like that, because it's just a natural transition. Like, why continue to do what you're doing on the road for as long as you are, when you could also just go into acting and possibly have a little bit easier of a lifestyle?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, like a lot of pro athletes, like in basketball and baseball and football, like their natural next step for a lot of them is to become some sort of like commentator or announcer or, you know, maybe in marketing or you know, be involved like behind the scenes in that sport. And it seems like for wrestling, it's like the acting gig, like being in motion pictures. That's like the I don't want to say the safe bet, because obviously getting into movies is not easy for anyone,
and not everybody succeeds at it either. They exactly tries it. Like, it's not like every single pro wrestler who's attempted it's been like an A+ actor or anything.
Yeah,
like, we've seen so many movies come out with some WWE wrestlers that have not been too great at all. And
right.
Yet again, to bring up John Cena tried.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and the Marine too. I don't even know if he was in that movie or whatever. What was that movie with, I forgot the actress's name. She was in Jericho, I think. But, it's like 16 blocks. It wasn't 16 blocks. 16 minutes or something like that. And, like, all these movies just aren't that great. He's not that great in it. And, again, you just fast forward to 2021, 2022 with Peacemaker and the Suicide Squad. And you're like, who the fuck is this guy?
Right.
John Cena.
Yeah, where did this guy come from? His performance totally blew me away. Everyone's performance in this mm-hmm. movie, just like you said a few minutes ago, was great. I really liked Adebayo, and I liked Harcourt, and excuse me, sorry. It's getting close to allergy season, so the throat is like, hey, you're talking, I'm gonna make you absolutely miserable. But, I think my favorite was Vigilante. He's probably
Freddy
my favorite. Strummer
as Adrian Chase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's so funny. And I have some more thoughts on him and his character. Whenever we get to that part of the podcast where if we want to focus on him, I have some more thoughts.
I completely agree with you. Freddy Stroma and is probably my MVP too, for the reasons we'll get into his character about. Danielle Brooks is Adebayo, Leota Adebayo. I thought she was great. I think there was times where I felt like they could have like delved a little more into the friendship with her and Peacemaker.
Sure.
But I still buy in that they're very good friends by the end. Mm-hmm. I feel like you could have done that far worse and been like, you're my best friend behind Eagly at the end. I've been like, fuck off, show. Like, they're not really friends. But you do feel that at the end. I just feel like they could have probably done a little more. I'm just nitpicking with that, too. And that's also with having, what, 8 episodes to deal with and what they're trying to do with the fun beginning to, wait, what is the show by the end?
Right.
Jennifer Holland and Steve Agee coming back from the Suicide Squad. Jennifer Holland playing Amelia Harcourt. I thought she did a really good job. I feel like she's more set up to do things in season two. Mm-hmm. Now that her character's starting to open up. Steve Agee as Economos.
Yeah, or Dyebeard.
I thought he was a solid character throughout the show. I don't think he was ever like at the top or the bottom of my list. But mm-hmm. he was probably around the same spot the entire time. The best part was the ending for him. When he had to actually tell the truth of why
he kept his beard.
It also, it led to another reason for, like, hey, Chris, this is why you don't be a dick to people. Like, and you understand why he is a dick like that, and he treats people the way he does. But mm-hmm. I think it really shows that to Chris and being like, this is what my actions cause. Like, these are the consequences of it. Like, because mm-hmm. I was a dick to this guy, this is what made him feel. I'm his friend. I don't want him to feel like that. You can just tell from this, to go back to John Cena's acting, from that face he makes. That's all.
Yeah.
No words were spoken. And I completely understood the shift in character for Peacemaker there.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said it all. Like, you know, when they're hearing him over the walkie-talkie or the earpiece system, however they were listening to each other, I can't remember. But yeah, like his face says it all. Like when he has that big confession and, you know, he was dyeing his beard to look younger because he spent his whole professional life and professional career like trying to make a career for himself, and he put like his personal life and relationships on the back burner. And in that moment, like it's just like something major clicks for Peacemaker that he realizes that, you know, they're not just words, like they have an impact, and they had a negative impact. And you could see all that growth just from that look on his face. And you know, just like you said, it's just another testament to how great John Cena's acting is.
And I'm just talking about the core team here, and you gotta also talk about Chuck Woody Awuji as Clemson Mern. I'm not even gonna try to announce the character's name as a butterfly. I listened back to it and I was like, I still can't do that.
I don't think I can even pronounce the actor's name. Like I looked up all the characters on IMDb and I saw his name and I was like, I don't feel comfortable saying it. I was like, I hope that that Taylor knows how to say it and does not call upon me to say
but
his name.
Thought he did a fantastic job as Mern, and
mm-hmm.
There's something, in terms of my problems with the show, I do think that's a missed opportunity to kill off Mern, and we'll get to that as well, but I thought he did an excellent job, especially when he's telling Adebayo why he did it, and she's like, you killed a human. And he said, yes, I did. I found the worst person I could. This guy is a murderer, he's a terrible person, but I still feel bad that I killed him. Mm-hmm. Like that performance in that monologue was fucking great.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was even this asshole that I took over could have redeemed himself, but he never got that chance because I had to take him over for this mission. And you understand all that motivation whenever he's telling Peacemaker, like, yeah, kill the kids. Trust me, you have to kill these butterflies. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to tell you to do this. They're not worth killing. I'm not Amanda Waller. All that stuff, like, he's just that kind of character that you're like, there's potential here. And I feel like the show kind of messes up by killing him.
Yeah, it's one of those like damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of thing. Like,
cause also the cows, the source of food is taken away. So Mern does survive for how long? Mm-hmm. So I guess you can look at it that way.
Yeah. Like you said, it is a shame that they had to kill him off, because I would have liked to see more of that character. But at the same time, like, I appreciate the fact that they wrote him in the script to die, to give stakes, like to establish the fact that there are stakes in this and that like people will die, like the main character, there are main characters that will die.
And it did make this, I don't want to say power vacuum, but it did create this spot for Harcourt to step up into. And I felt like her character needed something other than, as much as it pains me to say, just the kind of love interest to Peacemaker, but also mm-hmm. this badass killer. And it just was like, all right, so you're here for that purpose. You're the one who will kill anybody and to be the love interest to Peacemaker. So having Murn die, I will say that it gave Harcourt that chance to step up and get to do a lot more into the story, which I thought was great.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I loved her character. I am a sucker for a strong female character.
Mm-hmm.
I still think Wonder Woman, the first Wonder Woman movie that came out a couple years ago, is one of the best DCEU movies to date.
I was surprised, like, at how much, because I watched it later than everybody else.
Yeah.
Like, right before 84 came out, which, I'll tell you about that here in a second. But okay. What I thought was so funny was, when I got not mixed reviews, but, like, it ranged from this was amazing to it was pretty good. And when I watched it, I was like, man, this movie is really good. Like,
mm-hmm.
And for it to be at the time of 2017, I kept putting it in perspective. I was like, oh my God, this was like right after Suicide Squad and BVS. Like, how the hell is this movie as good as it is? And the only problems you have with it is the third act. So I got done watching that, and I was like, she is such a badass character. The No Man's Land scene was so great. That was probably one of my favorite DC scenes.
Yeah,
and then once you got to 84, and that beginning, where in the mall,
mm-hmm.
to me, I just thought it was so cheesy. I've still yet to see the rest of the movie because I was just like, there's no way the same people who wrote the first movie and worked on the first movie were part of that. And the second one.
Yeah, I was like, all right, Patty Jenkins, like, what the fuck are we doing here? Like, did you pop a couple of, like, goofballs before you decided to, like, write the script or direct the movie? Because, what do we got going on here? And when, like, I got really nervous when they announced that she was going to be directing the Rogue Squadron movie. Because, like, Rogue Squadron was one of my favorite games on 64. And I was like, oh my God, like,
who knows what's happening there now?
Yeah, so that's another story. We're here to talk about Peacemaker, but
All right, man. Dude, we get on so many tangents. I'm sure you guys do as well over at Geek Garage, but
dude, yeah, happens all the time. But yeah, Harcourt, she's a badass female character. Like I said, I'm a sucker for them, and she just I loved all of her scenes and just the way that they set her up is like, not necessarily like the stoic character, but you know, she's kind of a loner, and how she likes to wind down at the end of the day is like a drink by herself in a bar. And
that changes by the end of the season. I don't mean to interrupt you. She's now has a text. She creates the group chat.
Yeah.
With the rest of the team. And you see her actually start to build the friendships. And that's why I think by the end, whenever she's so pissed off at Adebayo, it's because she finally let these people into her life, and she gives, mm-hmm. she actually cares about everybody here, even Vigilante.
Yeah.
And Adebayo betrayed that trust, and that's exactly why she's so mad. It's not necessarily because of even Peacemaker, it's because you were my friend, how could you do that to somebody else you called a friend?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. You said it. It's, God. Yeah, her character, so good. Definitely. I was so relieved when they showed her like sitting in the hospital bed at the end and alive. And I was like, oh, thank God, because I was so worried that, like, because she was like sitting there motionless on the grass at the end. And I was like, no. But when, you know, turns out she's alive, I was like, oh, cool. So I will tune in for season two.
I want to go ahead and knock two birds out with one stone here.
Sure.
And talk about just a little behind the scenes. We just have some bullet points here to talk about. We don't want to miss any major plot points. But We're just going about them as whenever we want to. I want to talk about the action sequences and the soundtrack. Action sequences, I thought they were great. The gorilla fight in the middle of the season, I thought was great. And then whenever you got to the finale with the shield and, oh my God, that was so freaking cool. He shot the shield into somebody else.
Dude,
using the "Do you want to taste it?" I thought that was, like we talked about at the beginning here, I thought that was brilliant. And just everything with that vigilante getting shot, killing a butterfly right before he fell. Same thing with Harcourt. They went out like badasses without dying. And I also, before just turning this over to you, talking about the soundtrack, and this is the thing I love James Gunn about, is he uses music in his movies and television shows to not as like even an accessory. He uses it as a character in the story. I've used the word brilliant a lot, but it is excellent.
It's brilliant.
Whatever you want to use. It's brilliant. It's great. It's all perfection. Whatever you want to use. Because I love it. You look at the first Suicide Squad movie, and a problem I kind of have with it is, yeah, there are a bunch of popular songs. Yeah, like a lot of these songs, but they don't add anything really to the movie. You know, it felt like DC and Warner Brothers, they were like, well, these are popular songs, let's throw them in there because we're going for a James Gunn kind of feel with the first Suicide Squad.
Right.
And that's not really what David Ayer wanted, but that's a story for another day.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Sorry. See, this is what happens on the show, man. We just go into so many tangents.
Poor but David Ayer.
Guardians of the Galaxy, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 with Peacemaker, the Suicide Squad. It's just that James Gunn uses this music to add, to give you, he wants you to feel a certain way. He wants to make sure that you know these characters feel a certain way. And that's how he uses this soundtrack, and I thought it was just great. What about you?
100% agree. It really is, the soundtrack really is like a character of its own in his movies and TV shows, and it also helps, like, push the story forward in a way, but you know, especially with like just setting the tone and making you feel the way that like maybe you're supposed to feel, or the way that he wants you to feel, but or the way that you should feel. But like for instance, you know, Guardians 2, like it's I definitely prefer Guardians of the Galaxy 1 over 2, but holy God, man, like the end where they throw Yondu the Ravager's funeral, like tears every single time. Like I cannot hold myself together during that scene. Like the Cat Stevens music playing, like it just gets me every time. And this music in particular, like he just I'm like, is the dude like a walking like discography of like everything in existence? Like and like obviously Peacemaker.
He has a team as well, so we don't know exactly. Like we're not just going like, oh, I was just completely James Gunn. This whole team, the whole creative team, fantastic job.
Yeah.
So I don't think James Gunn knows every song out there in existence. Still, him and everybody else who does this with him, just you deserve a round of applause. You really do.
Yeah, for sure. But no, the hair metal in Peacemaker, like it just, I don't know why, it just really sets the tone, and like the fact that you can clearly see that's Peacemaker's jam, like that is his favorite genre. That's the music that he grew up with. That's the music that, you know, his dad played, and it's the music he listened to with his brother when they were younger. So
I thought it was the music his dad hated.
Was it?
Based on how shitty of a person he is, I don't think he'd like that kind of music.
Yeah, I'm sorry, that's my bad. I was conflating the his dad liking it between that and his brother. So so that's why, you know, he's so attached to all this music, or one of the big reasons is that him and his brother, you know, you get that one scene where they were sitting on the floor in their shared bedroom, you know, listening to records. And
this is part of it. It's going to sound cheesy and everything, I understand. But it's something about building relationships through music. Whereas a lot of other movies use them as just window dressing. Like, oh, we need some kind of cool song to play accompany this.
Right.
What do you want to talk about here? I'll let you pick our next topic.
Well, I guess since we're, you know, already on, like, you know, kind of character performances and music and whatnot, like I said, Vigilante was one of my favorite characters. And, you know, I think you brought it up earlier. It's in your notes here. And I've seen it on a couple other YouTube videos and blog articles and stuff. And it's like Vigilante is everyone's favorite, like, positive psychopath and all that. And, like, it's very possible that he is actually a psychopath or a sociopath, but I think there is a very distinct possibility that he is on the autism spectrum. I myself am on the high functioning end of the spectrum. I have two kids that are on the spectrum, so I like to think that I know a little bit about what I'm talking about when it comes to autism and how you could be or not be on the spectrum. And I think there are several clear indicators as to him and how he could be on the spectrum. Like, he talks about not being able to pick up on sarcasm, like the post-credit scene at the very end of the series or the season, where he talks about, like, hey, you should tell people, like, when you're about to use sarcasm. That's a very common trait with a lot of people on the spectrum. They don't understand sarcasm, or it goes right over their head. They take it all, you know, as people being serious. He has a couple comments about not being able to understand other emotions, and clearly he's very blunt about things. I mean, kind of unapologetically, like Peacemaker, but on a whole other level, like on a different level, where, you know, he speaks his mind, and it's like very, like, rapid fire when he talks. And I don't know, like, it felt like there's a distinct possibility that he's on the spectrum and not a psychopath or a sociopath. I don't want to sound like I'm speaking out of turn. I'm sure there's people that would disagree with me, but I'm sure there's others that would agree with me. That's just my two cents, and that kind of ties into one of my other previously stated likes and enjoyments about this series overall, is because of the representation. Like, you know, you have Adebayo, who is a lesbian, and that is totally, like, underplayed. Like, it is just a thing that is there. Like, they don't make a big deal out of it. Like, it's not like, you know, they go out of their way to, like, make a big fuss.
It's just part of the story.
Yeah, it exactly. It's understated is the right way to put it, I think. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's one of the things that this the show in general, and, you know, Adebayo and Vigilante, like, you know, the representation there is great. And then I think there is some talks, I don't know how for certain it is, about Peacemaker being bisexual.
I think that's pretty much been confirmed by James Gunn as well. And only you have a few lines from Peacemaker in the first few episodes that are like, well, he might be. And then, mm-hmm. especially when his dad is about to kill him, and it pretty much confirms it there.
Right. Yeah. So that's another thing that I really liked about the show, is that it's woke without being super woke and beating you over the head with
it. It's just trying to tell a story with people.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's it's one of the things that, like, a lot of, like, superhero and fantasy shows, like Game of Thrones, like Ben from Parks and Rec, he had this funny line where he's like, Game of Thrones is a smash hit. They're telling real human stories in a fictional fantasy world.
I thought you were going to go to the part in the final season where, like, Khaleesi's marrying Jack Sparrow. Oh my god, show's gone off the rails.
That show's really gone off the rails. It makes sense if you read the books. Yeah, I actually just got done watching that show for the umpteenth time. So
Parks and Rec?
Parks and Rec. I've only watched Game of Thrones once all the way through, and I'll eventually get to it again. But
I think Parks and Rec is another, like, you want to make another hey, this is a show that is pretty off the walls, like, it's a little wacky, but also it feels like they are people, like, who have their own personalities and their own motivations and their own feelings about everything.
Yeah.
And that's what this show comes across as.
Mm-hmm.
And it still comes, and I want to get into this arc. I feel like it's a natural transition to it.
Sure.
How Chris and Adebayo's arcs kind of parallel in a way, and how because of that, they are friends.
Yeah.
Because Chris has this terrible father, this racist piece of shit father.
Yeah.
And Amanda Waller may not be a racist piece of shit, but she is a murderous piece of shit.
Yeah, she is not a good person.
And she is not a great person either. And because of the terrible parents that they both have, they both have this connection that they have throughout the season. And this is how they become friends. And I think that's kind of pretty cool. Like, and you look at these characters and how different they are on pretty much every single, like, piece of measurement you want to. It's wild. And I think it's also pretty damn cool in that way.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's really weird, like, that couple pairing between the two of them. Like, they're so different. You know, like, Peacemaker, he's not really a racist, but he grew up in that kind of environment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have Adebayo.
But he is all, the one thing Peacemaker is he's naive. He is a conspiracy kind of theorist.
Yeah.
Because he is so naive, and he's like, oh, I heard this on Twitter, and nobody will lie to me on Twitter or Google. This isn't real because I saw it on Google. And it's just, it goes on and on because, again, his upbringing. And it shows how people's upbringings, it leads to how they are. And how they can also change past that. And that's, again, we're talking about the beginning of the show being so, I'm sorry, I just completely stole your thunder.
No, it's all good.
I went for the beginning of the show being so, like, funny. It's kind of hit or miss a little bit. But it's a fun little show. Then by the end of it, you're looking at these, like, human characters in this outlandish world, and you're like, why is this so fucking good? Like, why are they telling this story so well with these characters? And after the show is over, you just keep thinking about it in a way. And it's not like the story's so complex or something like that. You're just like, man, that kind of hits you.
Yeah.
Like, the way, like, each character has just this moment that hits you. It makes you kind of feel it after the episode's over. Like, Adebayo planning the diary. And then when the episode ends and you're just like, she really didn't want to do that. She just, oh my god, that sucks. With them all bonding and then Vigilante, because whatever reason. Like, you might be right with your theory, David. And or you might be a psychopath, whichever way James Gunn and the writing team want to go with it. But, with him telling Peacemaker after they all bonded, like, hey, do you think Economist was trying to fuck with me there? And then Peacemaker, who still is not perfect, he goes, Thimble, making fun of him a little bit. And it just regret, you know what I mean? It gives that, it lingers on Vigilante there, and it just, you can tell that he was put down.
Yeah.
So you feel that by the end. And there's all these moments with every single main character where you're like, oh, shit, that sucks. It makes you feel for him.
Yeah, for sure. I felt like this was a little moment, but very poignant, and really stood out for me was, I think it was when they were driving to, it was the gorilla episode, and they were driving to that site, and Peacemaker and what's his name? I just call him Dyebeard because I forgot the character.
John Economos, I believe.
Yeah, Economos. They have that brief bonding moment over that one band that I had never heard of.
11th Street Kids, I believe is what it's called. Yeah.
Yeah, and I felt like I was kind of waiting for something like that to happen, And when it finally did, it was like such a great payoff because they, out of all the characters that butted heads throughout the show at that point, I felt like Peacemaker and Economos butted heads the most, or at least, you know, it was pretty high up there in terms of characters who didn't like each other. And so that payoff of them finally finding some little common ground was very rewarding, at least to me it was. So,
oh no, I 100% agree with you. I just, the relationships in the show were so good. The characters themselves were so well written. And especially, and I keep like harping on the beginning episodes, and I'm not even saying it like in a bad way.
Sure.
Because it builds up to making me care so much more. Because it starts out so lighthearted, like, oh,
yeah,
am I going to have to fight a Mothra? And, which was fantastic. And the vigilante stuff. Like, there's a scene here, David, where Vigilante's talking with Peacemaker, and he's trying to cheer him up.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, Chris, do you think I feel bad when I have to kill a person for murder? Or for selling somebody heroin, or for graffiti, and like, it's just those moments. And then by the end, you somehow care about Vigilante. I thought Vigilante, I didn't mention this before, but Vigilante was probably my favorite character. And I think the moment he became everybody's favorite character is when he gets arrested.
And he it's has like that, he's a bad
fun, yeah, he's just this fun character. He's like, whatever theory you want to go with, whether he might be on the spectrum, he might be a psychopath, who really knows at this point in time. But he's just like, oh, I don't really, I kind of feel like he's killing people for graffiti. I don't really want to root for him. And he also killed kids. Right. I don't think he really gets the context either, you know? When he was this, he was just like, oh, I need to kill him. Okay, sure, I'll do it. So who knows what with this character, but with that prison scene,
dude,
that's where I think everybody was just like,
yeah,
fuck yeah, man.
Yeah, that's when everyone was on board, when like he just sat down. He sat down and he's just like, all right, let's everyone go around and talk about their favorite contribution from the Black community. And they're just looking at him like, what the fuck are you doing? And then he just owns fucking everyone. It was so great.
And only that, then he gets up and fights him and beats the shit out of him. And it's so, like, cathartic to see. Because for those, I don't remember what episode it was, but Chris's dad had been in prison for, like, at least a full episode to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And you could already tell where it's going. And you're like, oh my god, this is fucking terrible. You can see it building up to some kind of big fight, which it does.
Yeah.
So getting that moment of Vigilante coming in here and beating the shit out of him is a nice little small victory for the audience to be like, all right. Yeah. All right. I'm good. I'm good right now.
Thanks for that. Yeah, definitely. You jogged my memory a few minutes ago when you were talking about how, like, nonchalantly he talks about, like, killing people. It reminded me of the last episode, the opening scene when they're driving in the truck that they stole from the vet clinic or whatever.
Yeah.
And Vigilante is like, why is everyone so down? Or like, what are we doing? Like, we just had an awesome time killing Peacemaker's dad. Like, the way that he said that, like, it fucking floored me. Like, I fell out of my couch laughing so hard. So fucking funny. We just had a great time killing Peacemaker's dad.
The part two was with, I want to go ahead and talk about Peacemaker's dad and how much of a piece of shit this character is. And it's sad how, realistic this character is. And that's just terrible.
Yeah, that's I think that's another thing that helps ground this series into reality is, you know, even though there's a lot of fantastical elements, Peacemaker's got all these helmets that do different things and turn him into a human torpedo. And, you know, there's a cow that looks like a friggin' kaiju.
Giant alien baby.
Yeah, exactly. But you have like, you know, a clan leader and a bunch of followers, and you're like, well, this is not as fantastical as I once thought. This is a bit more grounded in reality than I initially thought. So, yeah.
Yeah, man. It goes back to the later parts of this series in particular, just going like, it hits you in different, like, it hits you at different points in the series. And I think it really does in that episode where they come after Peacemaker.
Yeah.
And you're seeing them in full force, and you're like, somehow, some way, these motherfuckers have got to get murdered in a brutal fashion. And boy, do they get murdered in a brutal fashion.
Yeah.
I love that Vigilante blows up, like, tries to blow them up. It was very Deadpool-like to me.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know, too. See, here's the one thing with Vigilante, and I don't know if we'll ever know the answer to it. I think he has a healing factor, something I think the character does in the comics. But in this show, he gets blown up, he gets shot, he gets part of his pinky toe sawed off with
a
terrible pair of shears. And he, by the end, he just jumps out of a hospital window like, eh, well, guess that's my day. I'm going to go back and blow some stuff up with Peacemaker later. So it's just that scene, too, where he tries to blow up the white supremacist, and then Economos gets to shoot most of them, and then we get the cathartic moment with Peacemaker finally letting it out and going, it's not my fault my brother's dead, it's your fucking fault, because you're a crazy person who made your sons fight each other for money.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's so cathartic to see that moment for Chris, because it's the first like real step he needed to take to progress as a person.
Yeah, because he had been beating himself up and blaming himself his entire life up until that point, since the death of his brother. Like,
and not to interrupt you there, man, but he'd also been defending his dad. Like,
exactly.
Even with Adebayo coming out and being like, your father's not a good dude, like, at all. Like, I know, like, and she's being very, like, understanding about it, too. It's like, I understand everybody thinks of their parents like there's some kind of good in them. Your dad doesn't have that.
Right. Yeah. But it's, you know, at the same time, it's like you, that's what makes him such an empathetic character and an empathetic situation, is that, like, I mean, I can't put myself in, like, I can't say that I have been in that situation or am in that situation with my parents, because my parents are great people. But I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that defend their parents to the moon and back when their parents are actually giant pieces of shit that don't deserve to be defended.
Blind spots are real.
Yeah, and exactly.
Not even just parents, just every kind of relationship there is. Like, blind spots are real.
For sure.
And sometimes you also need people, and not always to the extent of what the show is, where somebody's a giant racist asshole.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's just like, hey, this person kind of messed up, and you'll still defend them completely, not really noticing it. And I think that's something else the show does, is show that realism, and we all have that. Like,
yeah.
You and I have that for somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Like you said, that's one of the, just another thing that this show brings to the table is what you just said. And in addition to that, like, that there is room for growth. Like, there is, there's always an opportunity to change yourself and for the better.
Oh, most definitely. I 100% agree. And I guess the last thing I will mention about it before we move on is, damn it, I just had my thought there. And
sorry. I went on kind of a tangent.
No, it's all good. I was going to mention with Peacemaker. Damn, I know I'm going to remember in about 15 minutes, and it's going to piss me off.
That's the way it goes.
But let's go ahead and move on here. Let's move on to the next segment we got. So I want to go ahead and brush past a few things here that I don't think we're going to have a ton of things to say about.
Okay.
Twist with Mern. How do you feel about that? How'd you feel about the butterflies? We'll actually leave that one, because I think that's an interesting conversation. The twist with Myrne, the cow itself, the detectives, unfortunately, they really get the short end of the stick, in my opinion, by the end. Casper Locke, who was the Joker-looking guy that was helping out Myrne. What do you think about all that?
So the twist with Myrne, I feel like I did, and at the same time did not see that coming. Like, I just thought he was kind of like stoic and creepy and, you know, just was the strong silent type. But once the reveal happens, you're like, holy shit, like Myrne is, he's a butterfly. It made sense. And I thought that was a really interesting choice on the writing team to make him like the odd man out in terms of the butterflies, where he's like going against the rest of the butterfly clan or team or whatever, you know, to and want to side with the actual humans of Earth. So yeah, that's kind of what I thought about that. The cow, I wasn't sure what to expect. Like, when they mentioned a cow, I literally thought of a cow. I was like, I know it's not an actual moo cow, but that's what I had in my head, like, when they mentioned it was a cow. So, yeah, come to find out, it's this giant kaiju-looking motherfucker that it looks like a
with a giant baby like tooth.
Like a caterpillar. Oh yeah, it's pretty gross, but I guess on par with James Gunn. That's another thing that he does really well. Him and his, you know, special effects team is make these really grody characters. And
well, look at Starro and the Suicide Squad. Like how gross that is. And then that one last jab that is in the movie, that Starro didn't want any of this. He was just perfectly happy gazing out in the stars. And it makes you feel for this damn thing that killed so many people. And it's like, well, this, at the end of the day, this thing is pretty much just an alien animal doing what its instincts are trained to do. Like, it's not like it was going out here to take over the world.
Right.
And I think it, to an extent, you kind of get this with the cow, where it's like, you feel kind of a little bad when it gets killed. Or it's like, oh man, because the way it looks is, it looks so young. And so when it gets killed, you're just like, I don't know how to feel about that.
I mean, I had a feeling that it was going to die. Like, there was a moment where I thought that, like, they were going to like end up transporting it to wherever they were trying to transport it to. But I don't know. I had it in my head. I was like, this cow creature is probably going to end up biting the dust. And you know, it was a little sad when, you know, he turned Adebayo into the human torpedo, just shot through the heart. Like, when that happened, I was like, shot through the heart. I know you mentioned the detectives and getting the short end of the stick. I don't really have a whole lot of thoughts on that, so I'm curious to hear what you have to say about it.
I just mainly mean because they die in episode 6, I believe, and they pretty much are just used as butterfly villains at the end.
Right.
So that's what I meant by that.
Okay. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
I do think they get some funny moments where they're going back and forth with Augie and the detective messing, like, she kind of messes up the cool comeback, and he has, like, oh, you could have said this. And she finally says it. She has this awesome fucking comeback and makes Augie look like a moron that he is.
Yeah.
And then he actually messes it up for her. It's like, wouldn't want to be you. And he just looks at him with this, like, motherfucker, are you serious right now? And those are probably the only standout moments between the two to me.
Sure.
And then they just, like I said, become the butterflies, and Detective Song becomes Goff by the end, so she pretty much becomes the main antagonist. If you want to even call it that. But yeah. With Casper Locke, the other, I think that's his name. I just threw out a last name. I guess that's what I thought his is it? I'm gonna be very impressed with myself. Yeah, it is. It is Casper Locke. All right.
Good
job.
Here
we go.
Huzzah.
But I really like this guy. I don't have the actor's name in front of me, but this dude was fan fucking tastic. Everything he did, like his facial expressions were so good. It looked like James Gunn just directed him to, like, hey, nobody stop him. Nobody said the scene's over. He's going to decide when it's over. There's the scene, too. This is one of my favorite things. This is going back to the song, the soundtrack, adding as a character instead of just being window dressing. The monster thing where all the cops are being turned into butterflies.
Right.
And how painful it freaking looks, and just they're just painful deaths. And then whenever they're all walking down the hallway and they're all trying out their smiles, they have blood all over their face. And it cuts to Casper, this dude right here, looking like the most Joker looking person who's not the Joker in a DC property that I've ever seen in my life. Like, just so good, top to bottom, with this actor, with this character. And you talk about, like, there's these layers of people being, they're good, everybody has this nuance to them, except for people like Augie Smith, and I think Casper. This guy is just a piece of shit.
No, he really does have, like, the facial bone structure to, like, if you slap some Joker makeup on him, like, he would be a fantastic, like, older Joker. He really would be. And like, I didn't even really pick up on the fact that, like, you know, that last part of that scene where they're all walking out of the prison, or the police station with the prisoners, and you mentioned they're all, like, trying out their facial expressions. I didn't even really, like, I guess part of me was like, oh yeah, that's what they're doing. But for the most part, I was just like, I thought they were just acting insane. Like, I noticed one prisoner and he just had this shitting grin on his face. And I was like, that dude is really happy to be out of prison.
Well, it's because also Goff says every human has, like, it's different. I don't remember what the exact phrasing was, but it's like, it's different to smile.
Right.
And so that's why they're trying it out. And it's just that scene right there. It perfectly encapsulates what I mean by the soundtrack being a character. And so just it adding to the scene. And I remember after watching that, I was, I started texting my brother who hadn't seen the episode yet. And I was like, they need to give James Gunn all the awards. Like, whatever awards there are, just give him all of them. Give his team all of them. Just so good. And I want to mention this. I remember what I was going to say about 15 minutes ago.
Awesome.
So when we were talking about Peacemaker and his arc, and the thing I really loved about it is with Loki. I want to take a character like Loki, right? You've seen Loki.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yep. So 6 episodes. I thought his character motivation and his arc, the big shift in his character, made sense considering the universe ramifications of it. But it was still quick, right?
Right.
And I think you look at something like Boba Fett. I don't know if you've seen Boba Fett.
I have.
It still seems where it's a little quick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, so we're seeing it through flashbacks why he's changing the way he's changing.
Right.
With this show, it feels like it's trying to ground itself in that way to where it's not a flip of the switch. Mm-hmm. People don't, you're not changing, you're not gonna be better just because you want to be and because you'll change everything the next day. It's a progress. And you see that throughout season 1 with Peacemaker, and I think you'll see that throughout season 2 with Peacemaker and season 3 if they get it. And that's something I really loved about the show, is you're seeing him get better as a person. And by the end, he's still not there. Like, he's still, like, he's acting like a child to Adebayo when she's trying to apologize. Yeah, she did something really shitty, but he's over here making fart noises like a toddler.
Yeah.
Which is funny, but it's still like, oh, so he can't handle anything serious.
Yeah. No, that's 100% correct. It felt his journey from being, you know, like a mockery and an ass to being like a semi-respectable, nice guy who like changes on his own accord because of outside influence. Like the whole thing felt very natural, and you got to see it happen in real time. You know, you talked about like Loki and you talked about, you know, Book of Boba Fett, where you kind of have to consider that he changed in this retroactive sense because of the time hopping. But with this, like with Peacemaker, you kind of see it happen in real time. And it even kind of goes back and forth where, you know, he has like one or two learning moments and then he's still an asshole. But then, you know, he learns some more and you see a little bit of progress. So, yeah, all that was very interesting and rewarding to watch.
All right. David, we're spending a lot of time here on this podcast. I want to ask, you got a heart out at all? Or
Do I have a heart out?
Yeah. Do you have to get out of here at a certain time or anything? I want to make sure we don't have to rush through anything. Or
it is the freaking weekend, baby. I'm about to have me some fun.
Sounds fantastic. Mm-hmm. That is great to freaking hear, man. Let's go ahead and move on then. Let's talk about something more lighthearted here, man. Okay. Eagly's the best, right? Like, Eagly's just the best character in the history of television. I don't think I could stand if you say anything other than that.
I want a hug from a bald eagle. Like, that's... Like, I thought that closing...
Now, is that a felony? Can you get a hug from a bald eagle? It wouldn't end the same way. I can guarantee you that, anybody.
No, it would not
end the same way.
I would not recommend trying to hug a bald eagle. Like, I mean, first of all, like, kudos if you can actually find one. Like, I don't even know where what the process is like to go find and see a bald eagle. I gotta imagine it's kind of like finding a unicorn. But yeah, like I thought that scene was perfect. Like when, like the two times where he got hugged, where he's like, "Oh man, I don't have my phone on me," or whatever happens, and then like, you know, he's sitting there with Eagly in the vet's office, and he's awake. He's like, you know, I promise, like I'll change or I'll try and be a better person. Just please give me Eagly back, and he's, you know, comes back to life or he's awake and gives him a hug. He's got his phone and just a little bit of levity to the moment, but I don't think it cheapens the moment at all. I think it's still very heartwarming and funny at the same time. Like, that's just one thing that James Gunn and company does super well is find that perfect balance between comedy you know, seriousness, like in those
comedy and drama. It's a perfect balance between that.
Exactly.
I could not agree with you anymore. I think that scene where Peacemaker is just sitting there, he's praying, he's pretty much just like, I will do anything. This is my best friend in the whole world, this eagle. He's got to be all right. Because also, it's sort of his fault. He's putting this blame back on him because we go back to that confrontation with his dad.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing Peacemaker I really love about that scene too is he takes responsibility for it, and he
for
goes
sure.
It's not my fault that my brother died, but it's my fucking fault for not dealing with you to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
You are, for all the stuff about him being a superhero that he claims, and staring in front of him is this giant supervillain. He's just like, it's my dad, what can I do? And he really just owns up to that. And that was the part that I thought was so good. But with the Eagly thing, I think that's the scene that cemented it. And I was like, this show is really good, isn't it? Like, I think that was the scene that I was just like, they're really going to make, I'm going to really give this thing a 8, 9, or 10. Like, there's no way. Even the finale is not any good, which it was just phenomenal.
Uh-huh.
But even if it wasn't any good, I still would be giving it like an 8, 9, or 10 just because of how good it was up until that point. And with that scene, I think it just cemented that to me. Eagly also has this thing like R2-D2, to use this comparison. R2-D2 is probably the most hardcore character in Star Wars. I don't think it's even close. This droid will just heartlessly kill anything in its path. And Eagly is very similar. did not know Eagly got down like that.
That's a very interesting comparison. One that I did not.
Nobody doing podcasts is going to compare R2-D2 and Eagly together. So you know, yeah. I'm not saying that this show that we're doing here. I'm not saying it's the first, but this is the kind of content you only get in Nerds Talk Movies and the Geek Garage Podcast.
Exactly. Yeah. You come to us for these kinds of silly ass comparisons that somehow make a fuck ton of sense.
Right. We'll go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, yeah, that's a connection that I did not make beforehand, but now that you mention it, I'm like, yeah, like that's kind of true.
What did you think about the big finale? I thought I've already kind of talked about it a lot. I talked about the action sequence. I'm gonna just let you take the spotlight here. I'm just gonna say I thought it was great. I thought there wasn't really any real weak points here.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's gonna be one thing we're gonna talk about in particular. But just start wherever, man. The floor is yours.
So in the finale, the spotlight for me belongs to the main action sequence where it's Harcourt and Peacemaker and Vigilante. Is anyone else at that point in time that
are fighting? Is those three? Adebayo's back there with Economos, and right, then she goes out.
Yeah,
and but, I think I'm sorry. I just not mean to keep interrupting you, but I actually forgot to mention that because she goes out there,
yeah,
and completely John Wicks the shit out of the scene
with the two guns. Yeah, she fucking owns. I was like, yeah, you go, girl.
It's one of those things that's like. Also, I've seen people. Some like, oh, how the hell is she doing all this? And for one, I'm going, well, she's Amanda Waller's daughter. Like, for as much as she's not cracked up to do the, like, the Black Ops kind of thing, right. I'm sure she's trained.
Yeah.
Two, it's so cool. Who gives a shit? That's what I said.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Just like what you said, I thought that she was such a badass and that her arc in that sense was so great. How, you know, she's just not really complaining, but just, like, trying to justify the fact that she shouldn't be there, like she didn't belong there. And then, like, at the end when she's like, I was made for this shit, like, you're like, yeah, like, goddamn right, like, go get him. But yeah, like the action sequence before that, you know, between the three characters, like how it like pan, like, just it was so seamless how all that was choreographed and how it panned in between the between Peacemaker and Vigilante and Harcourt. Like, it was just so effortless and seamless, and all the butterflies like jumping through the air and how they were being deflected, and like it looked so good. I was like, oh my god, like I just want to I want to have this on like a repeat reel, just and rewatch it for like 30 minutes straight.
It's the best part about it is it comes out of nowhere. It yeah, really does. Where exactly. It's just like, oh, what is she? Because she also, I think she hops over the fence with, she takes both guns out and then she starts holding them both in one hand. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh god, how is this going to go? And then it just proceeds to, she just pulls a John Wick and I'm just sitting there like, why wasn't, kind of pulling the Avengers Infinity War, where was she this whole time?
Right.
Like, what the hell? Like, she could have definitely have been an asset to this scene. Something, I cannot believe it. It was great.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But no, for me, that was definitely the highlight. I don't know, there's just so many great moments in the finale. It's kind of hard to pick like a favorite, but
them trying to get Eagly to take the helmet over.
Oh, That was so funny. And like,
it reminded me of Groot so much from Guardians 2, where it's like, don't press this button.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's about to. He's like, no.
Don't press the red button.
Starts to ask around for tape. That's probably one of my favorite scenes from that movie. It doesn't sound like you're a big fan of it, but whenever he's just flying around asking for tape and you don't get to see it, you just hear Rocket asking. It's great.
Yeah. No, yeah. I really enjoy Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I didn't mean to sound like I didn't. I think it comes down to, and sorry, I apologize. I know this has nothing to do with Peacemaker, but it's still on topic. James Gunn, you know.
No, it's par for this show. Don't
yeah. But I think it came down to the villain. Like, the whole switcheroo, like, you know, gotcha moment with Ego being like the bad guy and his dad being the bad guy, like that kind of caught me off guard. It's kind of similar with like Iron Man 3 and how like the Mandarin wasn't really the Mandarin. I was just like it kind of rubbed me the wrong way, but like all the other positive moments of Guardians 2 like overshadowed any issues that I had with it.
But get back to Peacemaker with that scene. That's what it just reminded me of, was that right. Super Guardians 2.
Yeah, it's very funny. He just like takes it over to the other part of the woods. He's like, well, shit.
I think I did see this on IMDb when I was doing a little bit of research.
Oh, good for you.
Podcast. Just a little bit. But I think D. Bradley Baker plays this Eagly.
Really?
That took me for a loop when I saw that on IMDb. I want to make sure here, because I have this bookmarked.
Was D. Bradley Baker. I clicked on him and I see Olmec from Legends of the Hidden Temple. And so was he the voice of?
D. Bradley Baker. I don't know if you've seen Clone Wars, but he's the voice of the clones. He's a fantastic voice actor, especially. He's been in a bunch of stuff that just I would not do justice by just naming out one or two.
I've lost track of how many times people have recommended the Clone Wars to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, yes, it is on my list. I just have stuff that I need to plow through first.
So, David, I'm going to go ahead and give you a 5-point bullet list on why you should check out the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
But just moving on more into this finale here. Do you have anything else to say about any other moments before we talk about what the big thing was?
I don't think so. I've kind of said my piece up until this point.
All right, let's do it. Let's talk about it. This is what everybody was talking about coming out of that finale. How about that fucking Justice League cameo? I don't need anything else. This is 10 out of 10. Aquaman just told the Flash to fuck off.
Yeah. God, that was... That cameo was so friggin' rewarding. Even though it was just the two of them and the rest of Superman and Wonder Woman were just silhouetted out and they were... just played by they could have been just computer generated.
I think there were the doubles.
That makes
Wonder
sense.
Woman and Superman both had doubles that were there. I do believe, I don't know if this has been confirmed, but I do believe that James Gunn initially wanted to include Batman and Cyborg.
Mm-hmm.
And WB said nah.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do that. So
this...
he did what he could, I guess.
I mean, I guess in a real world situation, it would make sense for only part of the Justice League to show up. I mean, having all of them show up like at the same time or whatever, like that might be a little bit of a stretch. I don't know the logistics of summoning the Justice League, but I was cool with having Jason Momoa as Aquaman and Ezra Miller as the Flash, and just getting that fuck off Barry, or fuck you Barry. So fucking funny.
So
like
great.
Yeah, it's like, can we just have every single DC movie from here on out like rated R, please and thank you? Like, so
part of me wants that, but part of me loves this so much more because this is the medium where I can hear Jason Momoa's Aquaman tell Barry Allen to fuck off.
Yeah.
Like, there's something about that to be like, only on Peacemaker, this show, to where I can get that kind of content.
Yeah.
I did not know I wanted.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's one of those, like, you know, good in small quantities kind of things where, you know, you get a little taste and it just hits the spot. So yeah, totally agree. This was super fun cameo and one that I was not expecting, but was very delightful. So
my last real topic for us before we wrap up, man, is how do you feel about Jordan Master?
We actually had I don't think we've talked about Judo Master really at all. Just realized that.
Now, what we should have done, David, is talked about Judo Master and then quit like midpoint and picked back up about 30 minutes later.
Right.
Just kind of how the show does with the character.
I thought he was fun, but like, just like in this podcast, like throughout the series, I forgot he was a thing. And so I was really confused about the purpose of his character and why he's there. Like, still right now, like, I have no clue. And like, I don't even know if we're supposed to know why he's there. Like, is he a guardian for the butterflies? Like, because he seemed to know, like, right before he got shot in the parking lot, like, he was going to explain, like, the butterflies are not who they thought they were. But the scenes with him in it were a lot of fun. Like the first scene where, you know, they're fighting like in the woods or whatever, and he's like, "Kaya!" And he's like, "Did he just say Kaya? What does that mean?"
I kind of agree with you. I think, as far as the actual problems with the show, I think this is one of my main ones.
Sure.
Just because it feels like they introduced Judo Master. I feel like he has some great quirks about him. The Cheetos thing is freaking hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
I love the part where he was flicking Cheetos at Peacemaker.
Yeah.
And John Cena had the hilarious line, "What the fuck do they put in Cheetos?" That was great.
Yeah.
Him beating the crap out of those people at the gas station who were being jerks.
Oh, yeah.
And
that was
pans
crazy.
Over to the clerk and he's just thumbs up like, "Those guys were assholes. Thanks, man." Thought that was hilarious. But other than that, it's just like, why is he here?
Like, yeah.
I don't know. I don't even, and you said maybe we'll figure it out. Maybe we're not supposed to know the full story.
Mm-hmm.
I think even knowing, like, oh, they're going to go into it later, I still feel like it's a mistake not to give the character a little more or just kill the character off.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, because he is still alive, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
the last time we see him, he heads over to the farm and sees everybody dead, and he breaks down in tears, and then he starts eating more Cheetos.
Yeah. So maybe we'll see him in season two, and maybe he'll have like a bigger part, or at least like the reason his character is there will make a little bit more sense. Maybe they're playing the long game with him and his character. So, I kind of agree with you that was really the one sticking part of the show where I was just left me kind of confused as to what the purpose of him was. Mm-hmm. But other than that, like, you know, this whole show, this season, super solid. I have very, very little to complain about. So good.
Well, on that note, there, David, let's go ahead and get into our final ratings here.
Sure.
So how we do final ratings here at Nerds Talk Movies is we rate something on a scale of 1 to 10.
Mm.
1 being, you know, terrible. 10 being pretty much a masterpiece. Now, here's the thing, though. Just because we give something a 6 or a 7 doesn't mean we hated it. 6 is above average, 7 good. You know the deal. Mm-hmm. And also, I just say this in every episode because people, I think, look at scores a little too often instead of listening to what sure. we actually say. So,
yeah.
What would you give Peacemaker on a scale of 1 to 10?
You know what? I think I'm going to give it... I think I'm going to give it a 9. I was between a 9 and a 9.5, but I think a 9 is pretty good. I think that's pretty solid. Yeah, I'll go with a 9. Like I said, I really enjoyed it. The very, very little of the show. I mean, there really wasn't anything that I disliked about it. Everything. I loved the shit out of it. Like I said, when they announced season 2 was a thing, that it wasn't just a one-off, like, I was super pumped. So, yeah. Definitely a 9.
Let's go ahead and move on to what Tristan Benz thought of it. He sent me this. Nobody asked for this, but I'm sure as hell glad we got it anyway. Definitely an unexpected banger of a show with great action, entertaining characters, some occasionally hit or miss humor, an amazing soundtrack, and a surprisingly resonant performance from John Cena. I mean, it's incredibly just how much emotion he was able to convey without anyone even seeing him. I did not really Great stuff. Overall, I love this show for all the reasons mentioned and for its myriad deep cut references to DC Comics lore, and I can't wait for the next season. This all just strengthens my desire for a James Gunn-helmed Justice League International movie in the DCEU, and he gave it a 9 out of 10.
All right.
As for me, I think I'm with both of you guys. I think I'm going to give this a 9 out of 10.
All right.
I think this is a fantastic series. I think it's just bogged down just a hair by some hit or miss humor and by Judah Master.
Sure.
But let's go ahead and move on to what we're working on. Where can people find you? Mm-hmm. As for me here, I'm working on this podcast here. I'm working on our other podcast, The Nerd Stash Show. Next time, I can't wait to talk about the Batman spoiler talk. We'll get that coming up shortly. As David, what you working on, man? Where can people find you?
Oh my god, like 5 thoughts just try to exit my mouth at the same time, so I apologize. So, call to actions, website, geekgaragepodcast.com. We're on pretty much every single streaming app there is, or podcast app. So Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, et cetera, et cetera.
Now, are you guys on Audible?
We are, actually.
Oh, okay. We got some competition on Audible then. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you know, whenever I got into my host and they were like, do you want to be on all these platforms? I was like, yes, please. Let's be on all the platforms. we are not currently working on anything like super new or groundbreaking. We put out new episodes on a weekly basis. We try and do it every Wednesday, but sometimes we fall a little bit behind. Sometimes our recording schedules get a little, get pushed back. So sometimes it's like a Thursday or Friday, but we are pretty consistent with once a week. And like I said, at the top of the episode, we cover a wide breadth of different nerdy and geeky topics. Just recently we did we covered the Book of Boba Fett. We covered what did we do recently? We did,
can you give us a little snippet how y'all felt about it? Because Tristan and I did a spoiler talk. We felt it was all right. We kind of felt like it got a lot of hate that we felt was a little unjustified, but
I didn't really pay attention to the people that disliked it.
It was hard for me because I didn't watch it till the finale. So all okay. I'm seeing every week is this show fucking sucks. It's the worst thing on the planet. Give me the sequel movies again. That's what it felt like. I'm exaggerating, of course, but
sure.
Yeah, that's what it felt like I was seeing every week.
So I was going to take that approach of like just waiting until the end and then just binge watching it all. Because I watched the first, like, I think two episodes, and then I fell behind, and then I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna, it's only like six or seven episodes, I'm just gonna wait until the end, and then just watch them all in one fell swoop. But then it all got spoiled for me, because I'm on social media a lot, like, just either scrolling or, like, promoting the Geek Garage. So, like, the fact that, Mando is in there and he basically gets his an entire episode to himself. The Darksaber comes back, Grogu comes back, and Luke, and like we talked about this on the podcast a little bit, but like, holy shit, have they gotten really fucking good at the facial degeneration or like face swapping technology? Like,
they hired somebody from YouTube, I believe,
really who,
did a better job whenever the Luke cameo from Mando.
Uh-huh.
I believe they hired somebody who did a better job than what the season did.
Wow.
And I believe that person worked on it here. I don't quote me on that part, but okay, I do know that Disney hired somebody who was dealing with a face swap. I forgot what it's called.
Well, yeah, whoever it is, they deserve a medal of some sort, because it was like, I'm always, that's one
deep fake.
Yeah, that's one thing that tends to really take me out of the movies, whether it's good or bad, is the de-aging thing. Like the Irishman, like, I don't know who Scorsese hired for that, but they did a dog shit job of de-aging, like De Niro and Pacino and all that. But with this, like, I was like, it might as well be Mark Hamill from like 40 years ago. Like, they did.
Tell us how you really feel about
I loved
that was strong.
Dude, I loved The Irishman. The movie itself is great, but the de-aging is just, it's just not there. And it's funny because like The Irishman was only like a year or two ago. So it's not like there's this big time jump in technology and what's available. So like, it's just funny how like some companies can utilize it better than others. So, but either way, yeah. Yeah, that's the podcast. That's our that's the Geek Garage. Is we cover just, you know, a little bit of everything, and it's all very casual. And we don't do like anything super niche or anything particular. Like we like it to be very accessible to everyone, mm-hmm. so that, you know, if the example that I bring up a lot is like, if you're a big Star Wars fan but don't know much about Star Trek, if we do a Star Trek episode, you should be able to tune in for that Star Trek episode and learn something and not be lost in the weeds.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the example that I bring up a lot to kind of describe like our format and how the accessibility factor works. So.
And what days can people find new episodes?
Usually on Wednesdays. That's typically when new episodes drop. Like I said, sometimes schedules get a little funky and it'll be later on in the week, but 9 times out of 10 it'll be Wednesday afternoon.
Be sure to check that out. Be sure to check out our podcast as well here. See, here's the thing with collaborating, and I've told people this every time people come in to collaborate, there's no need for like, this our product over another. Everybody can eat. Mm-hmm. Everybody can be successful.
Yeah.
Nobody's tied to listen to one podcast. So you listen to this and you listen to this podcast before, you haven't heard of Geek Garage, go check them out. I will vouch for the show as well. I've listened to two episodes that are both fantastic. Especially check out the Hawkeye spoiler talk in particular. I thought that was a great episode.
Yeah. Thanks, man. I appreciate those kind words.
I want to thank David for joining me. David, it would be great to have you on. Anytime you are interested, you have my contact info.
Yeah, man.
I thought this was a great episode, man. I thought we freaking crushed it.
Yeah.
I told you, man, I wanted to talk about Peacemaker. We talked about this show for quite a while.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, man. I really appreciate it. And I know you weren't on the episode that Tristan was on a couple weeks ago when we talked about comic books, but you know, I really appreciate the opportunity for the guest swap and having me on here. And
mm-hmm.
you know, like you said a few minutes ago, in the podcast genre, it's all about guest swapping and cross promotion.
It's about collaboration. It's not about like going, and this is where people are just like, all right, we get it, cheesy people, get off the microphone. But it's not about, I've come across so many people in just content creation and writing. This is from the nerdstash.com, this entire network of podcasts, and not at the Nerd Stash, but at other places you come across people who are like, I gotta get my stuff in and gotta make sure. Chill out, all right?
Mm-hmm.
We can all be successful. We can all put our stuff out there. We can all work together. It doesn't have to be either or thing. So it was great to have you on this podcast here, man.
And
appreciate it, because I thought, again, this was a excellent episode. I thought it was a great spoiler talk, and it was definitely, I hope, great for anybody listening in to this podcast.
Yeah, it was good for me. Was it good for you?
Well, you said I was a little creepy there.
Yeah, way to make it weird, David. Good job.
Yeah, there you go. The very end. You answered the whole podcast, man.
Yeah.
But the next time you hear from this show, though, Nerds Talk Movies, I don't know about Geek Garage, but Nerds Talk Movies, Tristan Benz, Drew Garrison, and I will be talking about all kinds of spoilers for The Batman.
Mm-hmm.
That episode will most likely be out a little late. I don't know exactly when. We're all seeing the movie at different days, different times.
Right.
We're just going to record it. We're going to try to edit it together and get it out. Who knows really when. But we'll get it out as soon as we can. So until that episode, we will see you next week.